This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing and Buck 50 Productions present True to the Game by Terry Woods. This book is read by Carrie Height and Erica Peoples.
This book is dedicated in loving memory of my father, Clinton Brother Woods, and to my mom and my stepdad. Thank you for being there. You are always there, and you are always right. I love you. Jessica, you are what life is all about. I love you. Mommy. Acknowledgements. Meow Meow Productions would like to thank the following for all their past support, time, efforts, concern, and moments shared, which have helped MMP in all its endeavors as an independent publishing house. Phyllis and Carell, the financial institution for MMP. Thanks for the dough, Mom. Leon Blue, how did you do so much for me? You are truly that legendary nigga, and that's why I fuck with you. One nigga, always. Sheena Lester, I try to be nice to people. You just are. Thank you for being so nice to me and for being my editor. Brian Murray, Shirley McIntosh, my brothers Chucky and Dexter, Ms. Hughes and Radio One, you are a magnificent lady and a true role model. Thank you for helping me. Queen Latifah and the Queen Latifah Show, how can I thank you? Thank you. Robert Morales and Ayanna Bird, Leah Rose, Mia X, your story is next. You are amazing. Emil, if you need the shirt off my back, nigga, what? I got you. Queen Pen, Nelly, and Camp QP, for opening up your door and always keeping it real. One. Method Man, Red Man, James Ellis, Shauna Garr, I love you both. And even though it's been a battle this last year, I truly and sincerely appreciate your various efforts on this project. I really do. You two just don't know how much, with or without the deals. Thank you for everything. Tariq and UniQuest Designs, thank you for everything you do for my website and for me personally. Thank you for the past year. Daryl Miller, Esquire, you understand shit I can't even read. You are that nigga. Thank you. Michael Jackson, Esquire, Milligan & Company, Anslim Samuels, Carlito, Tone Boots, and Lamont Henchman, Branson & Eddie, thank you for holding me down uptown. Don Diva Magazine, Tiffany Maughan, and Cavario, Fire Escape Nigga, fourth floor, The Feds Magazine, Dave, and Antoine Smokey Clark, and Monique, Nikki Turner, the many individuals locked down and still holding me down, and of course, the streets. You held me down. You helped take True to a level I wouldn't have been able to by myself. Thank you so much. I can't go without saying to the various distributors and many bookstores and individuals who sold my book, published under my company, MMP, to the people across the country, thank you for giving my book the chance to be read. It is a pleasure doing business with you all. Thank you. True to the Game. Game Anthem. As you struggle to hustle, taking gain after loss, don't get discouraged. Just remember who's boss. Handle your business and always watch your back. Don't sleep on the stick-up boys waiting to attack. As you creep through the streets, the crack fiends holler. They've done any and everything just to give you those dollars. I hope it will last. I hope you make something of it. Time will tell if something good can come from it. But as you count the highs, count the lows too. And whatever you do, forever remain true. What choice do you have? It's in you by nature. Your only fault is being a player. 1988, A Night Out. Harlem, New York. It was the summer of 1988, and it was hot, too hot. Harlem had to be the hottest place on the planet in the summertime. Exiting the West Riverside Drive on 125th Street, Gina was amazed to see so many people standing outside a nightclub.
Damn, look at that limousine, girl. We need to be with them.
Laughing out loud, she was now suddenly anxious to get uptown. "We damn sure do," said Sahira, looking smug. It was amazing. There was nothing like it. 125th was a mini Greek playland in the middle of Harlem. Gina had no understanding. It wasn't like Philly. It was larger, and the niggas looked like Eric B. and Rakim, with humongous gold chains and diamond medallions the size of bread plates. If it was meant to represent wealth, that shit did its job, and Gina liked it. She looked at the girls and could not help staring at them. They had no clothes on. They were sexy and revealing, and Gina wanted to be among them, fucking with niggas, getting her life on. New York was the shit. There was no way she could live there, though. It was so fast, too fast. Fast niggas, fast cars, and fast lifestyles. The magnitude was large, as was the amount of men. Even the cars in New York looked different. Gina didn't know if it was the rims or the tires or what was going on. The dashboards were customized, leather MCM and Louis Vuitton seats, not to mention the detailed piping and $1,000 sound systems. That shit turned her the fuck on. Everything about New York turned her on, especially the guys. And to think, this was all so normal for them. Suddenly, Sahira did an about-face and shouted, "No! Look at that BMW! Is he the man of life or what?" Riding by, there he was with a squad of brothers deep in his Beamer. She couldn't contain herself. Leaning out the window, she called, "Hi." Turning back to Gina, she grabbed her arm. "Girl, don't he look good?"
"Sahira, bitch, is you crazy? This is Harlem. We can't just be waving at people up here."
Gina tried to pull the top of her friend's body back into the car. "Oh, shit, Gina, he's pulling over."
"Yeah, but he's all the way on the opposite side of the street."
Against Gina's protests, Sahira made a U-turn into traffic, causing every moving vehicle to screech to a standstill just so she could meet the guy driving the BMW. She greeted them, even as she double-parked just behind the Beamer, waving and calling to the driver. He stepped out of the car, fine as wine, and walked toward the girls. "What's up? What's up?" Sahira repeated. "What's your name?" he asked, walking up to them. Getting out of the car, she replied, "I'm Sahira. What's yours?"
"Ra's son."
"I see you have Pennsylvania tags. You from Philly?" Sahira asked. "Yeah. Tell your girlfriend to get out of the car." Gina insinuated herself out of the car and chimed,
"I'm Gina."
Ra's son openly admired what he saw. "What's up, Gina? I'm Ra's son. That's my homie Kadir in the car. Why don't you go over there and talk to him?"
"What does he look like?"
Smiling, he told her, "Go and see."
"How convenient,"
she thought.
"Sahira got the driver, and I got the passenger."
When she reached the other car, she announced,
"Hi, I'm Gina. Your friend Rasul said I should come over and talk to you."
Kadir studied Gina as though he'd just been introduced to a goddess. "My name is Kadir." After another minute, he thought he should say something and stop staring. "So, do you live in New York?"
"No, I live in Philly. What about you?
I live in North Philly.
Oh, I live out west.
What are you doing up here? Gina thought quickly how to cover her and Sahira's man-hunting designs on this side of the Lincoln Tunnel.
Well, my aunt is sick, and I just came up to visit her. Just a little white lie,
she told herself.
It can't hurt. What about you?
Business. Had to take care of some business, he told her, thinking about the kilos of cocaine in his trunk. What's a pretty girl like you doing out here in this big city all alone?
I'm not alone.
Gina's head was reeling from Kadir's blatant adoration, and every square inch of her body sported a blush.
I'm with my girlfriend, Sahira.
Oh, he said, looking at Sahira as if to say, how the hell will she save you? Shifting back to reality, remembering the kilos of cocaine in the trunk of the Beamer, he said, we got to go, but I want to see you tomorrow. Will you be in Philly tomorrow?
Yes. Want to switch numbers?
Most definitely. She said goodbye to Kadir and pocketed his number. Even though he wasn't driving, he was nice, and he was dark-skinned, and that was definitely a plus. Not to mention the diamond bezel Rolex watch he had on.
Damn,
she thought.
The man was dark as night, but his beard and his mustache were so sexy.
She would definitely be trying to see him tomorrow, which for her was a lifetime away. Gina and Sahira partied hard and met many guys that night, but like a magnet, Kadir kept turning up in her thoughts. Before Gina got on the turnpike, she went uptown to 145th Street to get a Willy Burger. She loved Willy Burgers. Nothing could fuck with them in the middle of the night, no lie. Like 125th Street, the saga continued. Mad money niggas were everywhere. She got some gas from the station down the street and was ready to make her journey back home. Crossing the George Washington Bridge, she couldn't help but look over at New York City's skyline. New York was the most happening town she knew of. She always hated leaving. Finally reaching Exit 6, Gina thought,
home sweet home.
It was about 5:30 a.m. when they reached Sahira's mother's house. Gina parked the rental car and looked at her best friend and the slobber and spit dribbling out of her mouth.
Sahira, wake up. We're home.
She nudged her leg and called her to wake up after she parked the car. Sahira was out, and Gina knew it would be a struggle to get her back to life. Another few minutes of calling out her friend, and Sahira finally wiped her mouth and opened her eyes.
Come on, let's go. I'm tired. You've been sleeping. I haven't.
Oh, did you see the EPMD guy, Eric?
How could I have missed him? He almost hit your simple ass when you jumped out in front of his Benz. You really got some serious issues to deal with.
Don't even try it. You got nerve. You're jealous because I got Kendu's number. Don't be mad. Besides, I saw you talking to, what's his name? Kadir. Yeah, him. Sahira talked as if Gina had behaved as poorly as she did. What about this guy? Look at our picture. Now tell me he isn't all that. I could have sucked his dick right out there on 125th Street.
I just know you could have, and I'm sure you will,
stated Gina, with more sarcasm as she shook her head. And that motherfucker in the Range Rover? If it wasn't for you, I would have really got my young life on.
I just know you would have.
Well, what did you think of him? Sahira insisted. Do you think he was cute or what?
Sahira, think the fuck of who? I don't know who you was talking about.
Sahira paid her no mind. Once they were inside the house, Sahira started counting the telephone numbers, which she had collected over the course of the evening. 7 numbers, she hollered. Gina couldn't help but to look at her friend in disbelief.
I'm going to sleep.
Gina and Sahara had been friends since they were 5 years old. Both grew up down in Richard Allen, the projects niggas wouldn't go to if they wasn't from there. When Sahara was 12, her family moved out to West Philly on 54th and Race Street. Even though they didn't go to school together after Sahara moved, she and Gina always kept in touch. When Gina turned 17, her Uncle Michael got her an apartment on Chancellor Street. He paid all her bills. No one in her family knew. Gina had pleaded with her uncle for years to move her out of the projects. He had really been there for her, and whenever she wanted something, he would help her. He kept her in a rental car and gave her money whenever she asked for it. She was fortunate to have someone in her family who made it and could show her the way. She knew plenty of people her age who had no one they could turn to in time of need. That was one thing Gina could say for herself. Even though she was raised in the projects, she had family who believed in taking care of the kids. Some people didn't have family like that, and Gina knew it. Some parents didn't give a fuck one way or the other. Do what you're gonna do, 'cause you gonna fuck something up anyway. That was the attitude. Half of Gina's friends had parents who said, "Hey, we got a party to go to." And that's where they were, at the party partying. Or if they weren't at the party, they were too busy getting high. Then you had the motherfucker sitting right there in the house, not giving a damn whether the kids were in the house, in the street, hungry or safe. A whole generation sat back and said, "Fuck it, I'm not gonna raise my kids." Hence, the saga began. Shit was rough as hell in Philly. That's why Gina liked her little trips to other cities. Gina and Sahara had done their share of city hopping too, seeing that there was other people out there, not just West Philly or the projects, was positive reinforcement for them. They went to the harbor in Baltimore and met niggas with boats. They went to D.C., liked the guys, but couldn't take the go-go scene. They traveled to Atlanta and met brothers with pets. From Miami to New York, they were there. They constantly received flyers for out-of-town parties in the mail. Life was just one big party. Gina was into the party scene. The same faces, the same places, and the same circles. When the junior mafia began spreading cocaine throughout the city, money was flowing like water from a faucet, and niggas were giving it up as if it were leaves on trees. Gina's whole entourage of male companions were young, handsome, and very wealthy drug dealers. Hustlers who loved to come on a set and just break a nigga off. It was too good to be true. And don't talk about sex. You were definitely getting broke down for dropping down. Wasn't no questions asked. Gina and Sahara dropped down, way down, for the lifestyle they were living. The only way not to give the sisters their props was if they weren't getting paper. Thoroughbreds of the streets. Getting money was what it was all about, and any way you could get it, you was supposed to. Across town, on a little side street, sat a burgundy Cadillac. The driver was eagerly and carefully aware of the sound of the street. He had been sitting in the car for 3 hours, waiting in anticipation. The movement of a tree branch blowing in the wind grasped his attention. He turned back to the gray screen door across the street. 3601, he thought to himself, deciding that would be a good number to play. He reached into his shirt pocket and pulled out a small bag of cocaine. He dumped a tiny pile between his thumb and his pointer finger and held his hand up to his nose. After he fed his nostrils, he took his tongue and licked his hand clean. On the seat beside him, laid an Uzi semi-automatic. He picked up the gun and took out the clip. Restlessly, he threw it back in, already knowing it was loaded. The gray screen door flew open and four guys emerged. They hopped into an NPV, never noticing the burgundy Cadillac following them. The next morning, Gina woke up to the sound of Sahira's four brothers and sisters acting like they were out of their minds.
"What time is it?"
she asked, as Mrs. Bowden walked by the doorway. "Oh, good morning, Gina. It's 9:30, baby. You want some breakfast?"
"Hell no,"
thought Gina.
"I want some sleep." "No, ma'am,"
she replied.
"I have to go. Tell Sahira to call me."
Gina was out of there with the quickness. On the way to her house, she stopped to get her favorite pancakes. At the intercom, she hollered,
"No pork. Do not put any pork near my food. Do you understand? I don't want to see it."
The poor girl at the window looked as if she had something to say, but didn't. Gina gave her the money and waited for her food and change. A burgundy Cadillac with black-tinted windows sped across the parking lot. All of a sudden and out of nowhere, thunderous gunfire jolted Gina out of her reverie and continued to echo through her body. The bullets sent a screeching sound through her body as the gunman met his target aimed for the four guys in the MPV. Gina's mind yelled, "Run! Duck down! Hide! Get the fuck away!" settling on none, until her survival instincts took her through the natural progression of ducking down and getting her ass out of there. She sped away from the takeout window and tried to exit from the parking lot when the burgundy Cadillac sedan DeVille with gold trim, tinted windows, and spoked rims cut her off. She slammed down on the brakes and missed hitting the driver's door panel by inches. For one long moment, she looked right at the driver. He had an Uzi semi-automatic in his left hand and had his right hand on the steering wheel. In that one moment, he looked at her, and their eyes locked. Gina knew him from somewhere, but did not remember from where. Wondering whether she should say hi, she just sat still as a stop sign and stared at him. Wondering if he should drop her ass too, he pointed the Uzi straight at her head and pulled the trigger. Nothing happened. He tried the shit again. The clip was empty. The thought went through him, "Yeah, this her lucky day." He threw the gun on the floor of the caddy and sped away. Gina sat there shaken and confused. She'd never had a gun pointed at her before. She just knew her beauty saved her. Little did the simpleton know, she had almost become a statistic. Her heart was pounding like drops of hail on a window pane. Talking her hand into obedience, she wrapped her shaky fingers around the steering wheel and instructed her right foot to come back to life and ease up on the brake, moving slowly toward the exit. She carefully looked both ways before entering onto 52nd Street. She drove in silence, creeping down the street, not even listening to the radio. She couldn't believe what had just happened, and she kept checking the rearview mirror to see if anyone was behind her. Man, her mind was playing tricks on her. The burgundy Cadillac was so clear in her mind, and the license plate tag, Mafia 23, was even clearer. Reaching her favorite parking spot between the two trees in front of her door, she noticed Jamal's, her boyfriend, Pathfinder parked down the street. She looked close and couldn't believe it. Jamal was sleeping in his Jeep outside her door. She walked over to the Jeep and knocked on the glass window. Jamal jumped out of what looked like a very uncomfortable sleeping position.
"Where the fuck you been?"
Gina just looked at him, as if she didn't know what he was talking about.
"I spent the night over Sahira's, Jamal."
"Oh. That gold-digging bitch with the matching hat and shovel?"
Climbing out of the Jeep, he continued.
"I thought I told you I didn't want you hanging around her."
"I know what you told me, but this is a free country and I can do what I..."
The words were lost as her body made its way to the pavement with the force of Jamal's backhand. Then he picked her up and began his accusations.
I know you've been with another man, bitch. Ahin't no way you was sleeping with Sahira unless you and Sahira is fucking each other. Shit. I've been out this motherfucker all night waiting for you.
The tears had already begun.
I wasn't with nobody.
You're a motherfucking liar. Why you got to lie?
The question was stressed with another pop upside her head, causing her to spin around and fall into some bushes. Deciding it was best to remain in contact with the earth, she pleaded with him.
Jamal, I wasn't doing nothing.
She looked up and saw Ms. Gladys looking out her third floor window, watching everything. Rising to face him, she said,
Jamal, I'm sorry. I won't go out with her anymore.
Where the fuck did you go?
I didn't go nowhere.
Slap was the sound that could be heard as he hit her again.
Gina, don't make me kill you out this motherfucker. Where you been? I said, where the fuck you been all night long?
Too scared to say she had gone to a party in Harlem, she just looked at him.
I'm getting tired of your shit.
Jamal, I don't want to fight with you. I'm hungry and I'm tired.
That's because your trick ass was out in the street all night.
The accusations gathered storm clouds to her eyes.
I'm not no trick, Jamal.
Focusing directly on his right eye, she realized at that moment any feeling she had for him was gone, and she was ready to kick him in his nuts and run for safety as usual. The nigga was crazy. It was in his eyes. If he walked away and she never saw him again, it would make no difference to her. Jamal had been in her life now for a year and a half. He was possessive, controlling, and basically a nuisance. She'd met him down in North Philly on 22nd and Ridge in a pool hall. He was real sweet and nice in the beginning. Nothing like now. The day they met was dreary, and it had begun to rain. He offered her a ride home. He asked her if she would like to get something to eat. She said yes. Gina didn't miss no free meals. Next day, he was at her door.
Hi. What are you doing here?
She was dressed in only a towel and a shower cap.
Get dressed. I'm taking you shopping.
They visited every boutique and shoe store that came to his mind. This all made Gina very happy.
What luck,
she thought. They reached her apartment and, indeed, he was more than welcome to come in. Only way she could get all her bags in the house anyway. Once she was finished poring over her purchases, hardly remembering buying any of it, and putting everything away, she realized she was happier at that moment than she'd ever been, but didn't know why. Jamal had rolled a joint, which he referred to as a spliff, for the two of them, and lit it as she collapsed onto the sofa.
Ugh, I'm so tired, Jamal. Why'd you take me shopping to buy all this stuff for me?
She really looked confused about the whole thing. The weed was taking effect.
I mean, you don't even know me.
That's okay. You're gonna let me get to know you, right?
Right. Anything you say.
She thought, looking totally satisfied at her diminished closet space. She passed the spliff back to Jamal after choking half to death and decided she had enough. For no reason, she jumped up and shut the mini blinds. Jamal realized she'd become paranoid, and he had become determined that he wouldn't miss his chance before she was too far gone. Through a short tirade, he tried to chill her out, and before she knew what happened, they were on the floor kissing, Jamal pulling at her clothes.
What are you doing?
She knew she should stop him.
Don't you think we should get to know each other? Don't you think you should wear a condom? We don't really know each other all that well.
He silenced her with a kiss, and she knew her struggles were in vain. Before she knew it, He was inside her.
"Doesn't it feel good?"
he whispered. She could only think,
"You're fucking a stranger and you need to get him off of you."
But for fear that he would get mad and take back all he'd bought her, she got in the groove, and before it was all over, he was asking her,
"Whose pussy is this?"
And she answered,
"Yours."
After dinner, Jamal dropped her off. For the third time, she looked over her new clothes, then took a bath and slipped into one of her new nightgowns. She no sooner sat down to begin calculating the total of the price tags when the phone rang.
"Hello?"
"What are you doing?"
"Nothing. I just took a bath and I'm wearing the Victoria's Secrets nightgown you bought me."
"Gina, I can't sleep."
"Why? What's the matter?"
"Because I can't. I'm coming to get you."
"When? Are you joking me?"
"No, I'm on my way."
Before she could protest, Gina heard the dial tone.
"Can't sleep without me,"
she mused.
"My shot is the bomb."
In 20 minutes, Jamal was ringing her bell. She was dressed, packed, and ready to go. Thereafter, Jamal refused to sleep without her. He wanted her there morning, noon, and night. He took her to school and picked her up. It got to the point where, if she went to the bathroom, he was there, sitting on the edge of the tub, watching her.
My, how things changed.
Now, he was beating on her in the middle of Chancellor Street. Gina wiped the tears from her eyes as Jamal got into his Jeep, belittling and demeaning her verbally. Looking at her hands, she saw blood from where she fell in the bushes. She noted the neighbors as she walked to the steps of her house, watching them all standing on their porches and peeping out of windows.
"Nosy motherfuckers. And didn't nobody help?"
Inside her apartment, Gina went straight to her mirror. She looked horrible. Her face was red, her head was pounding, and she was hungry. Her pale skin, all sore and scratched, throbbed in achy pain, and the tears returned. She had to break away from Jamal. It was like he owned her. She knew it too. But what could she do about it? How could she break away from him? Without him, she had nothing. With him, she was miserable with money. She needed a plan. On the one hand, she knew if she tried to stop seeing Jamal, it might cause her more harm than good. On the other hand, 18-year-old Gina wanted to have some fun. Entering her bedroom and turning on the television, she laid down on her bed, so tired. She was falling asleep when she heard the news bulletin. An anchorwoman was standing at the very restaurant she had just left. Behind her sat a navy blue Swiss cheese MPV in the parking lot. Three people had died at the restaurant on 52nd Street. One was listed in critical condition.
If not for an empty clip, she'd have been one of those statistics.
Gina offered a prayer to God, thanking him for his many blessings.
Recovery.
Waking from a peaceful sleep, Gina immediately dialed her neighbor's phone.
"Hi, Marquita."
"Hey, baby, I heard what happened. You all right?"
"I felt better."
"I've been calling you and calling you all damn day."
"I was asleep. You got anything over there to eat?"
"Girl, please. You know it's the first of the month. You want some dinner?"
"Is it dinner time?"
"It's 6:30 p.m., Gina. You slept all day."
Marquita brought Gina pork chops smothered in gravy, mashed potatoes, and cabbage.
"Damn, Kita, you know I don't fuck with no swine. Why you bring me this? You might as well have brought me a plate of shit."
"I could take that food home, sister. You don't have to eat it."
Gina sat there hungry as hell, looking at the food as if it were a diseased yak left behind.
Her mind was telling her one thing, but her stomach had a more urgent message. After a very short debate, her stomach won, and she ate the potatoes and cabbage, after removing the pork from the plate. Marquita had to tell her to slow down. "Gina, I want to talk to you about that man of yours, honey. If it's one thing that I do know, if he beat you up once, he'll do it again. Gina, you don't need no man like that in your life. You are young and pretty, and you could do better for yourself." Gina listened while she finished eating her food. Marquita would have to go, because she wasn't about to listen to some shit she already knew. Suddenly, there was a knock at the door. "Damn! What if that's your Looney Tune-ass man?" Gina headed for the door.
"You got my back, right?"
She relaxed when she peeked out the peephole and saw who it was.
"What's up?"
Gina said, opening the door for her cousin Gary. "What's up? Damn, what happened to your face?" He shook his head in disbelief, already knowing Jamal had hit her again. She told him the story, waiting to hear Gary say he was going to hunt his ass down and fuck him up for her. Instead, he reminded her that he warned her about him when she first started seeing him. He also reminded her that the boy was large. Gary didn't know what to do. He wasn't trying to fuck with Jamal like that. "Man, just stay the fuck away from him." As an afterthought, he asked, "You want me to tell Gaget?" Gina thought of her grandmother, Gaget, who raised her since she was 4 when her mother died. It was Gary, Gina, Bria, and Brianna who all came up together, all first cousins, all grandchildren. Bria and Brianna were 2 years younger than she was, and Gary was a year older. The years were hard and rough on her grandmother, who had raised 4 boys and 3 girls, then at one point had 3 of her children and their children, a total of 12, in a 3-bedroom project unit. So she fussed a lot and prayed a lot. But her propensity for sending her grandchildren to the store night and day because she gotta get this and gotta get that earned her the nickname Gotta Get, which progressed naturally into Gaget, their grandmother.
"Tell Gaget? Hell no, don't tell her. Please, whatever you do, don't tell nobody in the family because they'll run right back to Gaget and tell her everything."
"Don't worry, Gina. Shit gonna be all right." Handing her a couple $100 before he left, he advised her, "Just stay away from Jamal, you hear me?" Marquita went outside on the porch while Gina listened to her answering machine. Hollering outside, Gina announced,
"He called."
"Who called?"
"This guy I met last night."
"See? That's why you got your ass kicked."
"Shut up before I don't let you catch this."
Since she started fucking around with Jamal, Gina had developed a habit. She'd reached the porch again and began rolling a spliff. "Okay, but that's still why you got your ass kicked." The sun went down, but the sky was still orange. Marquita and Gina sat out on the porch and smoked the spliff, talking about Jamal and the ass kicking he gave her.
"Were the neighbors looking?"
"Girl, the Vietnamese people were watching. Everybody was rooting for you, though, especially when he knocked you into the bushes. Shoot, Tanya says she thought you was gonna kick him and run like before. Girl, that was some funny shit the last time y'all was out here." Gina and Marquita sat there laughing and telling jokes about Jamal. Meanwhile, everybody who walked by them asked Gina with intense sincerity whether she was all right or okay. Marquita just laughed at her. "I told you all these nosy motherfuckers got out of their beds this morning to watch you and tune time out this motherfucker." Gina went inside to answer the phone.
"Hello?"
"Hello. Is Gina there?" Not recognizing the voice, she asked,
"Who's calling?"
"This is Kadir." Gina beamed.
"This is she."
"Why didn't you call me back? I left a message on your machine."
I'm sorry, I was just about to. So, what did you do today?
I slept all day long. You were the first thing on my mind when I woke up.
You say the sweetest things. Or do you just say that to all the girls?
She prompted. No, baby doll. You're the first girl I woke up thinking about.
Oh.
She thought, smiling from ear to ear. Kadir continued. So what's up with you for the night?
Nothing. I'm just gonna take a nice hot bath and climb into bed.
I thought we were going to Atlantic City. While Gina was trying to come up with an answer, not remembering anything mentioned about AC last night, Marquita came running into the bedroom like a wildcat with his tail on fire.
Gina, Jamal just pulled up.
Did you lock the door?
Yeah.
Kadir asked her. Who are you talking to?
Oh, my neighbor. She fed me dinner tonight.
I would have fed you.
Oh, you're so sweet, but I gotta go now.
I'll see you in a few.
You don't know where I live?
Yes, I do. Sahira is here. We're on our way over there. Then he hung up the phone. Chickens couldn't have made more feathers fly. Gina looked from the phone to the door. The phone had a dial tone, and the doorbell was ringing.
I am not going out there, Marquita.
Her friend's mind searched for solutions.
Hide in the bed or something. I'll answer the door.
She headed for the front door as Gina jumped in the bed and pulled up the covers.
Motherfucker ain't gonna hit me.
Marquita swore as she picked up the Ginsu knife from the counter on her way.
Who is it?
Marquita stood ready with her trusty Ginsu.
You know who it is. You see me pulling the fuck up when you ran in the house and shut the door. Don't be getting smart, okay?
Ignoring her admonishment, he demanded to know,
where's Gina?
She's sleeping.
Well, I want to see her. She don't want to see you, and you lucky I wasn't home this morning, because I'd have came outside and kicked your ass, Mr. Big Man, wanna beat on women.
Kita was looking out the window at him now.
Here, give her these.
Kita looked at the boxes he had in his hands.
Leave them on the porch.
Kita waited a few minutes, and when Jamal was gone, she opened the door and picked up the 5 boxes and took them into the house. In each, Gina found 12 long-stemmed roses, each box containing a different color. Red roses, pink roses, yellow roses, and white roses with pink edges.
What the hell is motherfucker buy all these flowers for?
I don't know, but you can give me some of them flowers if you don't want them.
She said, munching on a cracker.
You can have them.
Gina, that nigga done bought all these flowers over here feeling guilty. That's how women beaters are. They always say sorry. Shit don't mean nothing, and neither do these flowers.
You want them? You can have them.
Leaving the roses in their boxes, she walked away from them, thinking about Kadir. She felt her power return.
Remember the guy I told you that I met in New York? He's coming over.
For what?
To see me, to be with me. What don't you understand?
He's gonna see you all right. And if Norman Bates comes back to this motherfucker, you gonna see. Do you understand that?
I'ma take a shower. Let me know when they get here.
She was nearly finished when she heard the doorbell and quickly stepped out of the shower and into her robe. Patting dry, she looked at her face through the steamed mirror. It wasn't that bad, but it was noticeable. Down the hallway, she could hear the sounds of her company in the living room. She hung her towel and walked down the other end of the hallway to her room. Just as she was kneeling over to slip on some panties, Sahira stormed into the bedroom to let her know Marquita went home.
Do you know how to knock?
Asked Gina with her arms folded over her naked breasts.
You act like I haven't seen you naked. You look different, though. Your breasts are bigger, Sahira said, looking at her girlfriend's nakedness.
Thank you. I've been drinking my milk,
she said, winking at Sahira. Seeing her friend's reflection in the dresser mirror, Sahira asked,
What happened to your face?
Jamal was outside waiting for me this morning.
What?
Sahira listened with her jaw down to her clavicle, beginning with the shootout, Jamal's attack, and the three deaths at the fast food restaurant.
I knew that motherfucker wasn't right ever since his ass crashed into a wall on that motorcycle.
Well, I've had enough of Jamal. The next girl can have him.
She turned back to the dresser mirror, inspecting her face. Sahira knew she meant what she said.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. Qadir Richards is the man of life.
Why is Qadir the man of life?
Smirking, Sahira served up her gourmet dish.
My cousin used to mess with his sister, Denise. Girl, sit down and let me tell you. G, the boy is paid. The BMW? It's his. He has a Range Rover, too. Guess what? He is a millionaire. Can you believe this shit? A real-life millionaire drug dealer right here in this house.
Sahira said, plopping on the bed next to Gina. Gina was starting to like the sound of this. The hair on her back was standing up straight.
Guess what else? He is supposed to be seeing some girl named Sherelle that lives up in Germantown, but she wouldn't know what to do with that motherfucker if he came with a booklet.
He got a bitch? Why'd he lie?
Gina tried to be disinterested.
No, girl. Are you deaf? He's seeing the girl. He's not claiming her. Rasun said he don't have nobody at home. The bitch is none of that but some change, G. I'm telling you, girl, you are in the house. You could just take over shit and move that bitch right to the curb. You know what I'm saying?
Sahira was just a-smiling. Sahira knew Gina. She knew Gina was a con. She continued.
I'm saying the kid been bugging out all night over you.
Word?
Word. That nigga is definitely trying to see you. Aren't you glad we went to New York? Isn't this shit blue?
Yes, so blue.
Gina was all smiles.
Girl, you found the jackpot, mark my words. You know you're taking me shopping for this one, right?
You know I got you covered. Tell him to come here for me.
Sahira left for the living room. In another moment, Qadir entered Gina's bedroom. The man was fine. He had on a pair of blue jeans with a polo shirt and a brand new pair of sneakers. He had just been to the barbershop. His beard was nice and groomed. And for some strange reason, he looked much better than he did last night. What's up? Then he noticed the marks on her face. What happened? She told him the entire story.
I won't be seeing him again.
He was glad to hear that, but wasn't too sure if he should be in the house without Ina, his favorite 9mm, which was in the car. No one is going to come in here, are they?
No one has keys except for me.
She reached up and ran the back of her fingers over his cheek.
I don't even miss him. I'm glad he's gone. I wish I could just get away, you know?
I know. I've been wanting to get away myself. You gonna go away with me? She looked him straight in the eye.
Mm-hmm.
When can you go? He asked.
Whenever you're ready. I can go right now.
Let's go to AC first.
First date.
Qadir knew exactly where to go. He drove over to Atlantic City. After buying everyone back in Philly a pair of Gucci sneakers, they gambled. Sahira lost every bit of the $550 Rasun had slowly given her. Gina, on the other hand, was doing mighty well. Taking the $1,000 Qadir handed her
and winning, winning, winning. She ended up with close to $4,000 by the time the night was over at the blackjack table. Later, they took the escalator up to the third level, where there were several restaurants to choose from. Once they were seated, Kadir told Rasun about his little run-in with Jarrell Jackson. Rasun didn't like nothing about the Junior Mafia.
Kadir, don't mess with him. He wants to be Scarface, own the fucking world and shit. He's the type will stab you in the back. Don't fuck with him, Kwa.
Ak, that will never happen. Gina was curious.
Who are you talking about?
Man talk, Kadir said. Nobody you know anyway.
I know who you're talking about, said Sahira.
Rasun jumped in, trying to shut her up.
You don't know nothing. Yes, I do. You were talking about Jarrell Jackson.
Gina brightened a little.
Oh, yeah, I know who you're talking about. Isn't he supposed to be the leader of Junior Mafia or something?
Yes, said Sahira.
Really?
Gina turned to Kadir.
How do you know him?
What difference does it make? He isn't the mob. Sahira wouldn't stop.
He's the leader of the Junior Mafia. It is the mob, okay?
Rasun spoke up.
Well, how do you know him?
Sahira warmed to her gossip.
One night, I was with my girlfriend. She was going out with him a lot. Anyway, he gave us a ride back to her house.
Kwa didn't like her no more, and he didn't believe one word she said. The girl might be telling the truth, but 9 chances out of 10, the bitch was lying through her teeth. He threw some money on the table and got up. Let's go. Gina, you know how to drive?
Yes.
He handed her the valet stub. Gently, she pulled Sahira over to her and hissed through her teeth.
You talk too much.
The drive home seemed to take forever. Everyone had fallen asleep, and Gina had no one to talk to. She reached over and rubbed Kadir's leg. He opened up one eye and squeezed her hand. You still want to go away? Gina wasn't sure she was hearing what he wasn't saying.
Isn't nothing gonna happen to me, is it?
Warming to her childlike fear, he told her, Baby doll, I wouldn't let anything happen to you. I'll protect you from all harm, he said as he winked at her. Gina pulled up outside Rasun's house and dropped Rasun and Sahira off. When they were alone in the car, he asked, What time will you be ready to go tomorrow?
Ready? Where are we going?
I don't know. Let's go to the Bahamas.
Are you serious?
Yes, I am. Gina just stared at him. She remembered how anxious Jamal was when they first met. Then she wondered, should she just leave town with Kadir? What if something happened to her? What if he was just as crazy and deranged as Jamal? She looked into his eyes and didn't have a clue. He could be a rapist, but she already made up her mind. If he wanted to take her to the Bahamas, then she was going. She turned onto Chancellor Street and pulled up in front of her door. 5 o'clock. I'll be back at 5, he said.
I'll be ready.
She said, real serious. So I'll see you later.
Later.
Gina just sat there looking at him. For some strange reason, she couldn't get out of the car. Something was holding her. She didn't know what it was until he reached over and put his hand around her neck. He pulled her closer to him and kissed her. At first, he just touched her lips with his, lightly. Then, he opened her mouth with his tongue and gently probed. Confusion and heat filled her like nothing she'd ever felt before, like magnets drawn to one another. It was magic.
Our first kiss.
Gina thought, in the safety of her apartment. Sahira was right. Kadir Richards is the man of life. The next morning, she had much to do. Shopping, hair, nails, packing, and that was only the beginning. The phone pulled her out of a trance. Gina, it's Jamal.
Oh, hi.
Ice crept into her veins. You all right?
I'm okay. How are you?
I don't feel good. I have a sore throat and a fever.
Have you been to the doctor?
She asked him. No, I'm not going to no doctor.
Well, I hope you feel better.
Are you going to come over and take care of me?
She could hear the faint hope in his voice, thinking to herself,
Hell no, bitch, die.
With satisfaction, she informed him,
Jamal, I can't. I have to go to the beauty salon and get my hair done.
Well, what about after you go and get your hair done?
After that, I have to go to the mall and pick up a few things. And I have to get my nails done. And I think I'll get my feet done, too. So I don't think I'll have time to come over there. I got a very busy day.
Jamal felt like he was getting the brush off, and he didn't like it. Not one bit. Everything he had done for her meant nothing. He could die, and it wouldn't mean anything to her. Well, Gina, I can tell when I'm not wanted.
Jamal, now why you say it like that? I thought that we understood that it wasn't working when you beat me up.
Gina, you always gonna be mine. What do you mean when you say it isn't working?
Is he brain dead?
Gina thought to herself.
Jamal, I can't come and see you. I'm confused. I need some time. I want us to just be friends.
Fuck you! All you bitches are the same. You ain't shit!
Shouted Jamal. With enough serene confidence to make his brain explode, she continued.
See, that's the very reason right there why we are not together.
Everything is my fault, right? You're the one who wants to be at every party on the East Coast. You're the one who wants to stay out all night with other niggas. Yes, you do. Don't lie, Gina. Tell the truth. For once, be truthful. You and that Sahira bitch stay out in the street all night chasing behind niggas. I know what you do. You don't fool me.
Jamal, first of all, let me tell you something, okay? I don't chase behind nobody. I get chased. And I'm not out in the streets all hours of the night either.
He cut her off and really let her have it. He accused her of everything under the sun, saying incredibly hurtful things. She found a wellspring of understanding that told her it was because he was hurting. If the things he was saying were true, it would cut her real deep. But what he was saying made her mad. Jamal had lost his mind calling her with a whole bunch of bullshit. She hung up the phone. That was it. Conversation over. And when he called back, she turned off the ringer. She wasn't about to listen to any more of his threats and accusations.